Okay, so we've been talking about this wheel of sharp weapons of our own evil karma, our own harmful actions that then turns around and comes back on us. And Dharma Rakshita, the author of this text, recommends that when that happens, we do the taking and giving meditation, taking on the suffering of other living beings and giving them our happiness instead. And if we're able to do this, then things that were formerly obstacles become something that's beneficial on the path. Okay, so we've been going through, we're starting a series of verses that are talking about when certain events befall us, it's due not to external circumstances. I mean, external circumstances are just the cooperative condition, but the principal cause is our own karma that we created in the past. And when we're experiencing an unpleasant result, then it's due to a negative karma. And so he's tying specific results we experience with specific actions that we've accumulated in the past. Okay, and so seeing that what we experience is a result of our own actions, then instead of blaming others for unpleasant experiences, seeing that it comes from our own mind of self-grasping ignorance and the self-centered thought, and therefore gladly accepting the suffering as something that purifies our karma, and making a firm determination to avoid creating those actions in the future because we don't like the results, and not only avoid creating those actions, but to really be quite attentive to the arising of the self-centeredness and the self-grasping ignorance and the other afflictions and really oppose them. Okay, so we had stopped with verse 10, talking about when our body is in great pain, that it's due to having caused injuries to the bodies of others. Yeah. And so this is, you know, since we have a body that will definitely get old and sick and die, that will definitely be the source of pain for us, it's helpful to remember this when we experience pain. And just think, okay, it's a result of my own actions. And I think when we do this, you know, when we think of the injuries that we could have possibly caused others in the past, it makes us a lot more humble and a lot less judgmental towards other people. Yeah. Because we see, well, yes, we could have been butchers in the past, or soldiers in the past, or, you know, murderers in the past, or who knows what we could have done in the past. And here we are experiencing the painful result of it now. And so, you know, when we have that feeling of having done those actions is not something that I would never have done in my life, or my lives, my past lives, then it makes us much more compassionate and tolerant of people who have done those actions this lifetime. So rather than judge them and condemn them, you know, we have some understanding for their situation. So verse 11 says, when my mind falls prey to suffering, it is the evil of evil, it is the weapon of evil karma returning on me, for definitely causing turbulence in the hearts of others. From now on, I shall take all suffering upon myself. Okay, so when my mind falls prey to suffering, so sometimes we get unhappy without any reason. We get depressed. We have anxiety or fear, a lot of mental anguish. Sometimes this comes due to some external spark, some situation that happened. Sometimes we just wake up and we feel crummy, you know, for no apparent reason. It's quite interesting to look at the sensations of mental pleasantness and unpleasantness and neutrality. We're so used to focusing on the body and when the body feels pleasant or unpleasant or neutral. It's interesting to look at the mind and see how we react to feelings of mental unpleasantness. You know, even when, you know, our health is good, but when our mind is unhappy, how do we react to an unhappy mind? Yeah. The mind's unhappy. Do we then get angry because we're unhappy? You know, there's this first state of unhappiness, but how we react to it. You know, we can get depressed because we're unhappy, or angry because we're unhappy, or resentful or spiteful because we're unhappy, or fearful because our mind is unhappy. You know, so you have the first feeling and then the reaction to that feeling, which brings more unhappiness. Yeah. So it's quite interesting to kind of look at how we react to our mental sensations. I remember one time when I was going through some difficulties and my mind was just really unhappy for a period of time. I remember walking down the street and it suddenly kind of flashed on me, like what the force of my dislike for mental unhappiness, you know. It's like my mind was just saying, I don't like this. There was real rejection energy there. It was very interesting to notice that. So when this kind of thing happens, to recognize it's the weapon of evil karma returning on us, so it's not anybody else causing us harm or something we can blame on others, but it's due to our own actions. And what in specific? Definitely causing turbulence in the hearts of others. Okay, so these others could be our spiritual teachers, our parents, the Sangha, friends, enemies, strangers, people who've been kind to us. Whoever it is, you know, but causing unhappiness in their minds. And so how do we do this? You know, sometimes we just look at people and our mind ruminates about how ungrateful they are towards us, or how they ignore us and don't pay enough attention to us, how they discredit us. And so our mind can do a lot of mental criticism of other people, and then that comes out in our actions and our speech. So sometimes, we do things that cause other people to worry, that cause other people to be frustrated, that cause them anxiety or cause them grief or shame or embarrassment. So doing things that disturb the hearts and minds of other people. So sometimes we do things accidentally. You know, we don't have a harmful intent, but somebody else's mind gets unhappy because of the functioning of their afflictions. That part isn't our responsibility. But sometimes we intentionally do things to make other people unhappy, or we're not consciously thinking, I want to make them unhappy, but we're not being very careful with our speech or our words. You know, we're being very careless and unconscientious, and so we do things that are hurtful to other people. Okay, so all of this creates that kind of negative karma. So, when this happens, the way to counteract that says, from now on I shall take all suffering upon myself. So to do this taking and giving meditation, and the suffering, the mental suffering that we've inflicted on others in the past that is now causing our own mental suffering, we take their suffering upon ourselves. Now, with the visualization I was describing before, imagining it coming out of them as pollution then we inhale it, it becomes like a thunderbolt that strikes at the lump of our own self-centeredness and self-grasping ignorance at our heart and completely destroys it. Okay, so we take on, especially their mental suffering, and, you know, we can think specifically of people who we've hurt and caused anguish to, or people in general who have a lot of mental suffering and take that on. And it's, you know, you may find when you're trying to take it on, one part of your mind is going, I don't want this. You know, I'm unhappy enough as it is. I don't want anybody else's mental suffering. I can't even handle my own. In fact, I want them to take away my mental suffering because I'm fed up with being, you know, tired and anguished and anxiety and bored and depressed and worried, and, you know, they should take my suffering. I don't want to take theirs. So, you know, look at that mind that is so reactive. And, because that mind itself is a state of suffering, isn't it? You know? And build up some courage and say, well, I'm going through this as a result of my own negative karma. You know, I'm experiencing this mental anguish anyway. So as long as that's happening, may I take on the mental pain of everybody else. You know, people who are grieving because they've lost dear ones, or, you know, people who are afraid or because they're in treacherous situations or who knows what. But take all of that on ourselves and take it happily and use it to destroy our own selfishness, because it's that selfishness that motivates us to create the karma that then ripens as our own mental unhappiness. Yeah. So this is a very effective way, actually, to deal with our own mental unhappiness. And I think most people in the West, whenever I've asked groups, people say that they've had much more mental unhappiness in their lives than physical unhappiness. You know, what's the case in your own life? More mental or more physical? So, you know, this meditation is a very effective way to deal with it. And then after we've destroyed our own self-centeredness and ignorance, then, you know, radiating light, the light of kindness and love out to others, and imagine giving our body and possessions and positive potential to them, so that they get everything they need in this life, plus all the conditions to practice the Dharma, plus all the realizations of the path, so that they become Buddhas. And, you know, if we really get into that meditation and really think that we're giving them all this stuff, then our own mind actually gets quite happy. Now, it's amazing. And the previous feeling of unhappiness just vanishes. Okay, then verse 12, when I am tormented by extreme hunger and thirst, it is the weapon of evil karma returning on me for engaging in deception, theft, and miserly acts. From now on, I shall take all hunger and thirst upon myself. Okay, so the situation is when we're tormented by extreme hunger and thirst. So this can be in this life, times when we've been very hungry or very thirsty. It can also refer to when we've been reborn as hungry ghosts, as pretas, you know, with that constant state of hunger and thirst and the dissatisfaction that causes it. And although this is specifically, you know, outwardly referring to hunger and thirst as physical sensations, it can also refer to a hungry mind and a thirsty mind. In other words, a mind that's dissatisfied. Okay, when our mind is thirsty for pleasure or for something interesting, you know, when our mind is hungry for acknowledgement or love or pats on the back or whatever. Okay, so whenever we have this hunger and thirst, it's the wheel of evil karma returning on us. What have we done? For engaging in deception, theft, and miserly actions. Okay, so we've deceived people in ways that have prevented them from getting what is rightfully theirs. Cheating people in a business deal, deceiving them so that they don't get what is rightfully theirs, that we keep it for ourselves. Out and out theft, which could be, of course, breaking in someone's house, but it could also be not returning things that we borrowed, or not paying things that we need to pay, kind of avoiding it. There's lots of ways to steal that are completely condoned by society, Or if they aren't condoned, they're considered white-collar crimes, and so somehow not as bad as breaking in someone's house in the middle of the night, even though you can bilk somebody out of much more money through a white-collar crime than you can through robbing them at nighttime. Okay, so, theft is something to really be aware of, because there's many ways where we can keep things for ourselves that are not rightfully ours. Okay, or miserly acts. So not sharing the things that, maybe we own something in common with somebody else, but we keep it for ourselves, or we don't let them use their fair share of it. Or when we have opportunities to be generous, our mind shuts down and says, but if I give, then I won't have, so I better keep it for myself. Okay, so all sorts of ways that we have of collecting this stuff for ourselves. And often this kind of action is done out of fear. We might actually have quite a bit of stuff, but when the mind is fearful, when the mind feels poor, then no matter how much external wealth we have, there's no sense of being wealthy inside. That's why in the inner mandala offering, it says without a sense of loss, okay? So to give without a sense of poverty, without feeling that if I give, then I won't have, but instead giving with really real genuine pleasure. Okay. So when we experience hunger and thirst in our lives, or especially when we're doing Dharma practice and we have hunger and thirst, to be able to bear that hardship gracefully, instead of going, So there's, for example, there's this one 2-day retreat called Nune, means abiding in the fast, and it's a 2-day retreat of Chemrezi where we take the 8 Mahayana precepts both days. The first day we eat one meal, and we can drink beverages at other times. The second day we don't eat or drink anything or speak. And so, it's very easy to have hunger and thirst during that time. So when that happens, then to be happy and to say, okay, now I'm purifying my negative karma of being miserly or of deceiving others, of, stealing their things. And so be happy about the hardship, especially because we're doing it for the sake of the Dharma. Yeah. So it's kind of the same thing. I mean, sometimes to get teachings, you have to go through a lot of discomfort. You have to, maybe go without a meal to get to the teachings on time, or you have to travel in real uncomfortable ways to get to the teachings, or you do retreat and, the food isn't exactly like you like it. They make barbecued cabbage instead, or they serve rice every day. And so your mind complains. So, when this kind of thing happens, instead of just letting the mind complain, say, okay, it's good this is happening because I created the cause. Now it's ripening in this small suffering instead of some big suffering. I accept that happily. And in the future, I will stop creating those negative actions. Okay, so it says here, from now on I shall take all hunger and thirst upon myself. So doing the taking and giving meditation in that way. But also, you know, then when we have the possibility to give, or have, when we have the possibility to share, then to share. I often, at retreats, you know, people come to retreats and most people bring some stash of goodies for themselves to eat in their room, you know, and we all think, well, I'm the only one who's brought a stash of goodies to eat in my room. Nobody else will know I have these, and probably, you know, so I won't have to share them. I can just go and eat them myself when I want to. And then I say in the middle of retreat that you have to start sharing your own goodies, you know. And it's a nice practice for people to be able to loosen up around that and be able to give and to share. So Lama Tsongkhapa said that miserliness is the way to become poor, not rich, and generosity is the way to become rich, not poor. So it's totally the opposite from how we usually think of things. And I know I had a strong experience with this myself, actually, because when I was a new nun, I was quite poor. You know, I was living in India. Nobody sent me money. I mean, it was very difficult to send money at that time. So I just had some savings, and at one time I had $50 to my name and no return ticket, and that's it. And still watching myself be quite miserly all the time. And then even after I left India and I went to France, I was living in the monastery there. And again, I think because of karma, we had to pay to live in the monastery because we had just started something and there was no money. You know, there was no money. So we had to work in the Dharma Center for the lay people, and then as a return they gave us our rooms to sleep in, and then we all had to pay some money to eat. And for the car expenses so that we could drive to the teachings. And I was very poor during that time. One time, we had to pay for our own heating, actually. And, you know, we were living in the horse stables. The monks got the house that the nuns were supposed to live in. So the nuns lived in the horse stables, outside the chateau. And it was cold, and we had to pay for our own heat, and I didn't have enough money to pay for the heating in my room, so I didn't have a heater. So I did a lot of prostrations that first winter because I was so cold. Mm-hmm. And I remember one winter day sitting in the meditation hall, that's where I did most of my prostrations to keep warm, and sitting down and having a quote-unquote long talk with myself and saying, you know, you're going through this because you're miserly. You know, you don't have enough money because you're miserly. And I had always kind of known I was miserly, and I mean, there's many instances of it in my life. But really, you know, having it, connecting all those instances with the fact that I was cold, didn't have the money to heat the room, and saying, I've got to change, you know. It's like it finally got through to me. I'm experiencing this result. I don't like it. It's due to my own selfishness. I have to change. And because things are not going to get better if I don't change. You know, I can whine and complain all I want, but if I don't have the karma, nothing's going to change. You know, so I got to start creating the karma. So that was a big kind of turning point for me, where I really started making more of an effort to be generous. And it's really quite amazing because after that, slowly, I began to get some support. Yeah, not tons of it, but a little bit, enough, you know. I think, I can't remember if I was able to heat my room the years after that. I can't remember, so probably I was. You know, if you're happy, you don't remember it. If you're miserable, you remember it very well. Okay. Okay, then verse 13. When I am powerless and suffer through servitude to others, this is the weapon of evil karma returning on me for treating the weak with hostility and subjecting them to servitude. From now on, I shall employ my body and life in the service of others. Okay, so the situation is when I am powerless and suffer through servitude to others. So this could be in the situation of, you know, being a slave, not that we're that in this lifetime, but, you know, in previous lifetimes, or having so much debt that you're kind of in servitude to the collection company or to the credit card company. You know, you can't leave and you lack freedom because you must pay off these debts. When you're forced to work at a job that you don't want to, when you're imprisoned. When I was in India this last visit, the monk who was taking care of the guest house where I stayed, he came in one day to help fix the hot water heater in the room. And we started talking, and he was telling me of how he had left Tibet and then how he had gone back to visit his mother when she was very sick. And it was very dangerous for him to go back. And sure enough, you know, the Chinese Communist police arrested him. And he was telling me about his time in the prison. You know, all these people completely stuffed together in one room with one toilet at the other end that was stuffed up and, you know, or it got stuffed up quickly. And then he got diarrhea in the middle of that. And, you know, of course you don't have your suitcase with a change of clothes and everything else. Yeah, I mean, it was really a horrific situation. And it was quite something for me, kind of sitting with this, you know, nice-looking monk, clean, you know, healthy in front of me, telling me about this horrendous situation he had been in. And it really made me see how resilient human beings are sometimes and the possibility to go through a lot of suffering and come out of it. And when he was telling me the situation, you know, I mean, if I had had that, I would have definitely been feeling sorry for myself and milking the story for everything I could get. But he wasn't doing that. He was just kind of like relating what he was doing, like you were relating how you were putting up the sheetrock today. You know, I just kind of told the situation. Okay, so what I'm trying to get at is we may feel, oh, imprisonment, servitude, that's not something I'm going to experience. But then here are people who, through no fault of their own, wind up experiencing it. You know? And there's no lack of people, even in our own prisons, who are being held, you know, for crimes they didn't commit. And now, especially with the Patriot Act and the ability of the government to detain, especially foreigners, without, you know, indefinitely without filing charges, who knows what's going to happen? And, you know, people who could be our neighbors or could be ourselves being imprisoned. Okay, so that kind of situation. Then, you know, when we have feelings of powerlessness, you know, which we can have even when we're not in prison, then to recognize it's the weapon of evil karma returning on us, for treating the weak with hostility and subjecting them to servitude. Okay, so in previous times, or even in this lifetime, we might have been a boss in charge of a project and been very hard with the, you know, our employees or the people who were working for us. We may have looked down on other people, been very condescending, very deprecating of other people, are very bossy, very manipulative of other people, making them do something so that they don't want to do. Out of our manipulative skills. Okay, so seeing that this is all a result of our own actions, basically of using other people for our own selfish purposes. Okay, and so instead of that, seeing the cause that we created to experience the powerlessness and the servitude, then making the resolve, from now on, I shall employ my body and life in the service of others. Okay, so rather than use others for our own selfish pleasure, we're now making a determination to employ our body and our life, in ways that can benefit others. So regardless of whether somebody has high social status or low social status, for us to have the intention to be able to benefit that person and to respect that person. So instead of looking down on others with condescension, to have respect for everybody. And there's so many different ways that we can look down on others. Yeah, we can say, I'm a human being and that's a cat or that's a tick, so I'm superior. Or we could say, I'm a monk or a nun, and this person isn't, so I'm superior. Or, I'm American, I live in the richest country, the police of the earth, so I'm superior. There's so many ways that we can be condescending to others that we may not even be aware of, especially when we travel to other countries. And the way we treat other people, I really see this sometimes when I'm in India, such a kind of imperialistic condescension on the part of some Westerners towards the Indians. And the Indians have the world's largest democracy. I think it's quite incredible what they're doing. And yet, there's all sorts of subtle racism and classism that we Westerners bring in our attitude towards people who are letting us live in their country and letting us eat the food that they grow. Okay? So, becoming aware of that and instead changing our attitude so we have a feeling of wanting to take care of others and using our energy in the service of others. Okay, so everything we do can become an act of service to others if we have the right motivation. Now, it doesn't mean we need to, it's always good to, of course, to look in our lives about who needs help and what we can do. But even if you're just doing your regular job, if you have the attitude of I'm doing my job as an act of service to the people who benefit from my work. Yeah? So, whatever work we're doing, people benefit from it. And if we have that idea in our mind that, I'm going to work not just so I can get money and go live it up, but so that I can offer service to the people who benefit from whatever it is I'm making or whatever service I'm providing, then that's good. Or if we go to work with the idea of I'm going to be of service also to my colleagues and also to my boss, and I'm going to help create a happy feeling at my workplace and be of service to people in that way, then, what we're doing becomes something positive. So it all depends on our own mind. I think community life can really bring this out in people in a really good way. And I know for myself, I have a lot of purification to do in this regard. Because sometimes when you live in community, it's very easy to get this mind of, you made that cup dirty, I'm not going to clean your dirty cup. We have a rule that everybody cleans their own cups here, and you left your cup in the sink, and I'm not going to clean it, And I've seen this happen time and time again in community. you know, where everybody has, you know, there's a rule that everybody cleans up after themselves, somebody doesn't do it, and then other people just, why are you doing this? Why are you acting? I'm not going to do it. You didn't do your job, you know. It was your turn to cook, and you didn't cook, and I had to do it. You know, and just being in a bad mood, you know. Or, you know, you should be the one doing this, not me. No, I should be doing something else. You should be doing this. And, you know, community life, if we don't have the proper attitude, it can become a lot of trips like this and a lot of resentment. And having fallen into that too much myself in the past, now what I see is, you know, there's a definite need to purify. And so community life also provides the circumstances whereby we can purify that karma. And how do we do it? By offering service and by changing our attitude and not keeping this mental tally of how many cups other, how many people's, how many dirty cups that belong to other people that I've washed versus how many of my dirty cups I've left around. Not keeping that mental tally, because you know how we can do that, you know. Or how many favors I've done for somebody and have they done enough favors for me, you know, to warrant me doing another favor for them. And, you know, I think community life is the perfect opportunity, you know, if we have this sense of I've created a lot of negative karma in this regard, then community life is the opportunity to do a lot of purification and to really change our attitude instead of focusing on, you know, what I think I should be, do and be treated as in the community to, you know, just, okay, here's what needs to be done, let's do it. Yeah. And even doing things that don't need, you know, somebody forgets to do their particular job, so we do it and we don't make a big deal about it. Because sometimes I can, you know, it's interesting because I think in community, if you have just even one or two people who have that kind of generous attitude, then everybody else catches on really easily. You know, it becomes very easy. If you have one or two people who are kind of, you know, I'm not going to pick up, you know, you left your Dharma book on the coffee table in the room that we all share. I'm not going to pick up your Dharma book and put it away, you know. You took out a library book and didn't put it away, and I'm not going to. All you need is like one or two people who have that idea, and it just permeates the whole community likewise. Yeah, and I think it's probably the same at the workplace. Yeah, but if you create that friendly attitude, then it really spreads to everywhere. And I think I may have mentioned my friends at Shasta Abbey. They have a policy in their community that whenever they see somebody, they put their hands together, you know. So we've been doing it here mostly when we first see somebody, you know, first thing in the morning greeting them, or when visitors come greeting them like this. But I think that in itself just makes a difference on how we treat people, you know, because we just get in the habit of showing respect, and then our attitude towards them changes, and we're willing to do things that are more grateful and kind to them. Okay, then verse 14 is what happens when we don't have this attitude of gratefulness and kindness. When unpleasant words reach my ears, it is the wheel of evil karma returning on me for my verbal offenses, such as divisive speech. From now on, I shall condemn all my flawed speech. Okay, so when we don't have that attitude of kindness and we aren't extending ourselves to others, when we're always measuring what we give to them versus what they give to us, you know how that is? You know, well, you gave a present to me that was worth so much last year, so now I'm going to give a present to you that's worth approximately that much, maybe a little less if I can get away with it. You know, okay, so anyway, So what that attitude brings is the situation of when unpleasant words reach my ears. Okay, so when people criticize us, when they insult us, when they yell at us, when they tease us and ridicule us and make fun of us, when they say things that are offensive, when they talk behind our back and we hear about it, when they misunderstand us and then spread their wrong understandings high and low, you know, our usual reaction is to get defensive, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, even somebody from their side, they're not trying to offend us. If we misinterpret what they're saying or we don't like it or whatever, you know, our instant reaction is, kind of, don't mess with me, buddy. And, you know, we make sure we kind of make a little comment back and let them know that we heard what they said, or, you know, or we get very defensive and we start lobbying other people to be on our side. You know, we start talking bad about them behind their back. Okay? So instead of doing that, you know, which just creates more karma in that regard, doesn't it? You know? To realize this is the weapon of evil karma returning upon me for my verbal offenses, such as divisive speech. Okay, so what have we done to create the cause to, you know, hear unpleasant words and be blamed and everything? Well, we've blamed other people, yeah? Or we've been mad at one person and we just take it out and vent really harshly on another. Or we gossip about somebody behind their back. Or we pick faults, you know, those of us who have our PhDs in fault picking. Okay, if you ever need a fault picker, you know, very good one here. Yeah, can pick faults that exist and even faults that don't exist, you know. Okay, sometimes saying things without thinking, that could be hurtful to other people, or calling other people names. You know, all sorts of ways in which we've misused our speech and used it to create disharmony, either among other people or between us and someone else. Okay, so instead of just giving into that speech, then making a determination, from now on I shall condemn all my flawed speech. He had some good inference. He got to listen to some teachings.
Yeah.
Yeah. They say that even animals, you know, if they hear the Dharma, then it puts good imprints in their mind. Then even later when they're born as human beings, they have some imprint of the Dharma. Yeah. There's the story of one monk who did very, very well in his debating studies until he got to one class. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's like he couldn't understand things so well. So somebody with clairvoyance looked, and they saw that, you know, the way the monks debate is the classes are in rows. So this monk in a previous life had been, what was it, maybe a scorpion or, you know, some kind of insect who was walking first at the, you know, the first class, and then walked by the second class and walked by the third class and heard all of them debate. And in a certain class, they found him and then they took him far away, so he didn't get to hear the debating after that. Mm-hmm. So he didn't have those imprints in his mind, and that's why his studies weren't as good when he got to a certain class. Anyway, back here. So from now on, okay, I shall condemn all my flawed speech. So what doesn't mean, you know, that we get mad at ourselves. Oh, look at me, I spoke so harshly to somebody else. Oh, now you're a jerk. But rather just censor ourselves and be more mindful and aware of our speech. And if we do that and practice in this way, then when we hear harsh words that have been directed towards us, then, first of all, we won't get upset, you know, by them. And so our own mind will be peaceful. And then, second of all, we won't react in an aggressive way that then creates more turmoil with other people and creates more karma to experience more of what we just experienced. Yeah. So that's the trick with all these situations that we're talking about here in which we've experienced suffering. If we're not aware, then just due to the force of our self-centeredness and our afflictions, we just have this knee-jerk reaction, this habitual reaction, motivated by our afflictions, and we do things that create more negative karma and more karma to experience the exact kind of unpleasantness that we're reacting against because we don't like it, you know? And so that's why sometimes it's like, you know, when they say we're our own worst enemy or we shoot ourselves in the foot, when we understand karma, we see that that's really, really true. You know, that, you know, we want to be happy and not suffer, but because we're so ignorant, we create, you know, the cause of suffering and abandon the cause of happiness. Okay? So these teachings are very practical, you know, because they're talking about situations that we encounter in our life all the time. So verse 15, when I am born in a place of impurity, it is the weapon of evil karma returning on me for always cultivating impure perceptions. From now on, I shall solely cultivate pure perceptions. Okay, so the situation is when I am born in a place of impurity. So this could be a place that's really dirty and muddy, a place with a lot of pollution. You know, you're born in, or you grow up in a place near, you know, a place where the government has dumped a lot of toxic substances, or where there's been a lot of pollution of the rivers and streams and waters that you may or may not even know about. When I lived in Missouri, we were about 10 miles upstream from a place that the government had used to dump toxic waste during World War II. And the town had an incredible rate of birth defects, even though the EPA said that they had cleaned up the site a long time ago. And, of course, there was a high school right next to the site. Okay, so when you're born in an impure place, or we could live be born in a nice place, but our particular circumstances are very horrible, you know, like you're born in a country that's quite beautiful and has a nice climate, but you're born very pure, and so you're living in a slum outside the city. Now, if you've ever been to Mexico City, Mexico City, what an example of an impure place. The air there is horrible, you know. And then on top of that, you know, it's the largest city in the world, and there's all these shanties outside of the town where people live in extraordinary circumstances, you know, very much like India. And then, of course, in the city, you have people who are quite wealthy, just like in Indian cities, you have the same tremendous disparity. Actually, in our own cities, we have this too, but due to cars, we're able to drive past it, and we don't even notice it. Yeah, I think in other countries, it's more noticeable because they don't have highways that, you know, are nonstop that you know, circumvent all these bad neighborhoods. In other countries, you have to drive through them so you see it. Okay, so when we're born in that kind of situation, or a place where there's a lot of air pollution, yeah, more and more common now. So this is the weapon of evil karma returning on me for always cultivating impure perceptions. Okay, so what this means, impure perceptions, due to our grasping at true existence, then we generate all sorts of afflicted mental states, you know, hostility, attachment, clinging, craving, resentment, laziness, all these kinds of things. And due to them, then we begin to pick faults. Our mind gets very judgmental. We start judging everyone and everything according to our own standards of how we think they should be. And of course, everything falls short. Yeah. So if we have a kind of perfectionist personality, then we have very high standards that it's impossible for everybody else to meet. And we spend a lot of time mentally criticizing, complaining, and judging people. And people at retreats talk to me a lot about this problem of judging. It seems like everybody suffers from it, having a very judgmental mind. You know, oh, this person's doing this. Why are they doing that? Oh, this group of people. Oh, this Buddhist tradition is different than my tradition. They're wrong. You know, oh, this teacher, I don't like what they're doing. Oh, this student, whoa, who do they think they are? You know, and just constantly judging. Oh, my boss, they do this. You know, oh, my employees, they can't do anything right. No, the government, nah. You know, always complaining. Everything's impure in our view. Okay, so instead of doing that, instead of cultivating these impure perceptions, which cause us to be born in an impure place, you can see the link between the mental state and how it manifests externally in our life. So then instead of that, making the determination from now on, I shall solely cultivate pure perceptions. Okay, so in Buddhism they talk about different ways to generate pure perceptions. One is to doubt our own perception. For example, we don't know who's a Buddha and who's a Bodhisattva and who isn't. Okay, because Buddhas and Bodhisattvas appear in all sorts of ways and they don't wear name tags identifying themselves. Yeah, and according to what we need at any particular moment, there could be a Buddha or Bodhisattva manifesting in that form, you know, providing us with an opportunity to practice or helping us purify or whatever. And so since we don't know exactly who's enlightened and who isn't, they recommend not criticizing anybody. Okay. Now, this can get a little bit difficult because what happens if somebody asks you for, a job recommendation for somebody else, are you not honest? Do you not tell the truth about that person if they're not so strong in one field? Yeah? So I think here we have to watch our motivation. If we have a motivation to harm somebody, oh yeah, I'm going to say that they're bad this and this and this because I don't want them to get the job, you know, then that motivation is an impure motivation. You know, we need to abandon that. But if we have the attitude of compassion for the person and also for the employer, and we don't want the employer to get stuck with somebody who's not going to be able to do the job, or the employee stuck with a job that they're not going to be happy with, then if we have some information, you know, that somebody, you know, this may not be their particular forte, then, you know, we mention that in the evaluation that we're asked to perform. Okay? So it's not saying that we cover things up, you know, because that can lead to lying and deception and more problems. But what it's asking us to do is really check our motivation and not let our mind fall into this incredible thing of being judgmental. I can't remember, did I mention to you people when Lama Yeshe one time asked me that? Okay, must have been somebody else when I was away I told this story to. Because this thing of, you know, we don't know who's a Buddha and Bodhisattva, so don't criticize anybody. Well, one time when Lama Yeshe was visiting one of the Dharma centers where I was living, you know, I had a private appointment with him, and we were just talking about some stuff, and he started asking me about how so-and-so doing and how so-and-so doing. And, you know, because I worked in the administration of the Dharma Center, I knew what was going on, and, you know, people had some problems, and there were some quarreling, and people not acting so nice towards one another, and some problems. And I got a little bit stuck, like, oh, if I tell all this to Lama, I'm criticizing people, you know, and I shouldn't criticize fellow students, you know, to their teacher, and I shouldn't criticize it at all. And so I was just kind of hemming and hawing and not telling Lama, you know, things. And, of course, he picked up on that, and he said, okay, tell me, you know, what's going on. And I began to realize through this that he wasn't asking me because he wanted to gossip and put somebody down. He was asking me because he needed information. And I had that information. And Lama had compassion, and whatever information I gave him was going to be used for the benefit of the people involved in the situation. So if I could talk about the different things that were going on without exaggerating people's faults or without having a blaming attitude and still reveal what was happening, then Lama could actually step in and do something that could help the people. Whereas if I didn't say anything because I was so afraid of criticizing somebody, then I was denying him the information that he needed to be able to benefit these people. Okay? So it all comes down to our mind and to check what our mind is doing. Of course, when we do the tantric practice, we're trying to see everything as pure. You know, try to see the environment as a pure land, the other sentient beings that we encounter as deities and enlightened beings. And this is a technique that helps us to practice. But it's important to understand that technique properly. For example, if we see one person beating up on another person, do we just say, oh, this one's Yamataka, one fearful deity, and that one's Mahakala, another fearful deity, and they're just doing this as a show, and actually nobody's getting hurt, nobody's fighting, and it's just two deities, so I don't need to intercede because they're just two Buddhas, and if they're Buddhas, nobody's going to get hurt. Even though, you know, maybe that it'll look like they get hurt, but that's only an appearance of a Buddha, but actually nobody's hurt, so I won't intercede and stop the fighting. Well, that's not right, okay? Okay? That's not the meaning of seeing everybody as a deity. It doesn't mean that you just sit back and let people beat each other up because they're both wrathful deities. You know, you can still see them as deities, and you can still think, you know, it's Buddhas appearing as two ordinary human beings, you know, beating each other, and, you know, they're providing this opportunity for me to show my compassion and to develop skillful means and to think of some way to intercede and stop the suffering. Okay? Are you getting what I'm saying? You know? That we don't just kind of use this thing of, oh, well, they're Buddhas and Bodhisattvas to not care. It's kind of like when our teachers are sick. You know? We don't just say, or the Dalai Lama's sick. We don't say, well, he's Chenrezi, so, you know, he's already enlightened. He's already a Buddha. He doesn't need to go to the doctor. Okay, no, that's not the proper way to think. If you're going to think that, you know, he's Chenrezi, well, he is, but he's showing this aspect of an ordinary being so that I can create some good karma by coming out of my self-centeredness and taking care of somebody else and making sure he gets the health care he needs. Or he's, you know, showing that to help me understand not to take my teachers for granted. Yeah. But it's not something where I just sit back and go, well, he's Chenrezi, so, you know, I don't need to, you know, make sure that he goes to the doctor. So this whole thing of seeing people as Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, as seeing an environment as pure, we have to understand that the purpose of this very clearly is to protect our own mind from anger and dissatisfaction. Yeah, it's a way to think to protect our own mind from getting negative. It's not a way to think so that we develop all sorts of stupid, fanciful ideas and projections on other people. Okay? So that's very important. And I say that because I didn't understand this for a long time. And so in trying to practice it, I would get very tangled up, you know, and wouldn't know what to do until I finally started asking my teachers, well, how do you practice this and what does this really mean? You know, and then started understanding. Okay, is that making some sense? Understand that? No? So seeing things as pure, does it just mean like, you know, oh, there's a dead rat on my plate, you know. Oh, it's all bliss and emptiness, so everybody else can eat the dead rat, you know, because they're all Buddhas. They're all Buddhas, and dead rat is a Buddha, and, you know, it's only an appearance, so I consider other people a dead rat. No, that's not the way to think about it. Okay. Okay, so this one is really about trying to look on the positive side of what somebody is doing and seeing somebody's good qualities instead of their faults, seeing things as pure instead of having a mind that grumbles and discontent all the time.